Well, good afternoon. Welcome to City Bible Forum. Thank you for coming along today and looking at getting into the series, continuing on with City Seduction and Food today with Dominic Steele. Thanks again for those who came last week and also have come from the past few years. We really appreciate you coming back. But we also understand, too, that there might be some here today. It might be your first time. And if it's your first time coming along, what I'd like to do is just kind of put you at ease and kind of tell you a little bit about what this is about, the City Bible Forum. What we'll do after the announcements today, by the way, my name is Russ Matthews. I work with City Bible Forum. And after the brief introduction, what we'll do is read a portion of the Bible, which actually you'll find inside of your outline. If you have it with you, it'll be right inside the inside cover. And so I'll go through and read a portion of that for you. And then Dominic Steele will come up and do a talk based on that portion of the Bible. After that, or actually during the talk, what we encourage you to do, with there's a piece of paper inside there, and grab a pen on the table. If you have any questions, write down your questions, and after the talk, Janet will actually go around and actually pick up your different questions, and then Dominic will take the time and go through and answer those questions for you. So today, again, we want to welcome you, and if you'd like to, go ahead and open up to your outline, and I'll just read the first few sentences out of Numbers chapter 11. Now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord, and when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. So the place was called Terabah, because fire from the Lord had burned among them. The rabble with them began to crave other food, and again the Israelites started wailing and said, "If only we had meat to eat." I'd like to welcome Dominic Steele up, and I'll be back up in a little bit. Thanks.
Hey, look, thanks very much, Russ, and good afternoon. It's nice to see you here at the City Bible Forum this afternoon. And today is, as Russ indicated, the second week in our series, Seduction and the City. Last week was introduction, and then over the next few weeks, today it's food. Next week, seduced by arrogance. And then we're going to look at seduced by fear, and then seduced by anger. And then seduced by money, big issue in the city, and seduced by sex. And we are looking at the issues that seduce people these days away from God. And here at the City Bible Forum, we have all sorts of different people come along week by week to our meetings here and the ones down in Angel Place, down at Martin Place, just down there. And there are people who come along to the City Bible Forum who've been walking with God, relating with God, traveling with God, in relationship with God for a long time. And that might be you. And there is a risk to you that you might be seduced away from trusting God. And there are people also here at the City Bible Forum, and you might be this person just putting your toe in the water in terms of relationship with God, just beginning to explore the possibility of relationship with God. And there's a risk to you, in fact, that you might be seduced, and this might be a bit of a shock. There is a spirit world, and a spirit world out there, and there's a devil who's actually desperate to seduce you away from trusting God. And then there are people here, and this might be you standing at a distance from God, checking him out. And perhaps that's you, a little skeptically perhaps, and you don't feel like you're being seduced away from God because you never really started with him. But I actually want to suggest to you today that your position is not the position of an impartial observer watching. You're actually in a worse position than that, but we'll come to that in a few moments' time. The point of today is choose carefully, that we need to choose carefully in terms of our thinking, position, in terms of God, because the choices we make have big consequences, and some of them can't be undone. We are tackling in this City Bible Forum series, this series on seduction in the city, we're tackling that by working through books of the Bible, and we're doing it looking through the Old Testament book of Numbers. And I want to suggest this week and every week that the book of Numbers should not be consigned to the bottom drawer of Old Testament uselessness. It actually has very significant things to say to us. and particularly that will impact our lives in the city. Today we're looking at Numbers chapter 11. Last week we're looking at Numbers chapters 1 through 10. Last week we saw the Israelites had been rescued by God from slavery in Egypt. Slavery was awful, oppression was awful, working hours and hours and hours and hours, and little food and cruel oppression and years. I mean, it had been 400 years they'd been in Egypt, 400 years of oppression, and God had seen his people in oppression and at the misery of his people. And he sent the 10 plagues and Red Sea, and just to give you the feel on the map, so we've got Egypt over here, the land of Goshen, and then they've been rescued by God, and they're kind of here is where the Israelites are as we begin today. And they've got to go on this journey to the promised land, the land of Canaan. And last week, our passage finished Moses triumphantly, optimistically looking forward to the promised land. And there was the picture, the idea of God guiding his people towards the promised land. And we finished last week on a very upbeat note. And so we start today, and we need to know that it is a 11-day walk across there, an 11-day walk from Mount Horeb to Kadesh Barnea on the Mount Kia Road. And so we're 2 days into the walk. We're thinking 9 days to go. Now, it's not just their story from 4,000 years ago. It's our story too, because everybody here in this room is somehow in this story. Either we've set out with God on the journey, and there are some of us here who will have set out with God on the journey and will identify with that position, or we're still stuck back in Egypt, still stuck back in slavery, still stuck back in under an evil tyrant. You might say, I mean, that's not good, that's fairly insulting. I mean, my life doesn't feel like slavery. I'm doing well in the company, I'm paying off the mortgage. But God's picture of people, and God has a spiritual picture of people, is that they've either been rescued by him and have begun the journey with him, or they're back stuck under a different rule, or back stuck under a different Lord. I mean, back in those days, it was very clear you were either stuck in captivity, awful captivity in Egypt, or you were rescued by God. And the people that had been rescued by God, there were 12 tribes we saw last week, 12 tribes of Israel. And this group is camping in the desert. And at the very center of the camp is God's tent of meeting, and they're moving through the desert. And we've gone for 2 days, and the people start to grumble. And the grumbling is about food. And so chapter 11, you see it there in the handout sheet, the first verse that was on that printout that Russell read to us a moment ago. Chapter 11, sentence 1, "Now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord." And it is genuinely difficult in the wilderness. It was a hard walk. I mean, background Mount Sinai was relatively fertile, but now we're a couple of days out into the desert, and it's pretty rough, and pretty rough heading through that desert. And they're grumbling, and God doesn't like what he hears. "So the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord," verse 1, "and when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp." Now, you read that today, and you could kind of be excused for suggesting that, well, does God have an itchy trigger finger, that he's kind of up there and somebody has a little whinge, and who hasn't had a whinge in the office this morning? Somebody has a little whinge, and God says, okay, burn that tent, just lightning bolts coming around down burning tents to the edge of the camp, and cow, kapow, gotcha. And that's not the way to think about it. We shouldn't think of the character of God like that. Because if you do any Bible reading at all, there's a verse like this one in Exodus chapter 34, which is just around the corner from Numbers in the Bible. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of their fathers to the third and fourth generation. But the picture is of the God compassionate and gracious, abounding in love. And well, what is this kapow then? Well, it's not an isolated incident. There's been a whole build-up to this. God rescued them from Egypt. They were under slavery. He did the 10 plagues. He brought them out. He's parted the Red Sea. He rescued them from the superpower, and he's brought them into the land, and they started to grumble. And then they grumbled, and then they grumbled. It's been 2 years of grumbling on and off, and 2 years of rebellion, and 2 years of testing God's patience. And I'm the minister of a church in Annandale, and we've had difficulties with our Anglicare bins. And the difficulties with the bins outside our church have been that too much junk and stuff is dumped, and not enough collections happen. And earlier this week, I sent the people at Anglicare a fairly terse email complaining about the mess. And if you didn't know the context, you would think, that was a pretty terse email, Dominic. But it's been years of me asking them for more collections. And in that context, I'm not terse. I'm actually so patient. I'm patient beyond people's ability to believe patience about how messy it's been and how long I've put up with it. And that's actually how you should see God here. His patience has been stretched beyond what you could imagine, and they're grumbling, and God only burns a few tents around the edges just to remind them that that's not the way to go. You get to verse 4, the rabble with them began to crave other food, and again the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate at Egypt at no cost. What's wrong with that line? They were slaves. They were slaves in Egypt. The fish, I mean, it's not like they used to go to Doyle's in Egypt. That's not what it was like. They were slaves. They were working from 6 o'clock in the morning till midnight making bricks to build pyramids. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions and garlic. What rubbish. What a miscued memory. What they were eating in Egypt cost them their life. But it's not just them back then, 4,000 years, that can misremember bad things to be good things. And there's things that I remember back, and something that was really bad I actually remember as being good. It happens in Christian ministry. We're here in the City Bible Forum. One of the things about the City Bible Forum is people come from the office. They bring a friend from the office. You come, you sit, and in the time of listening, and this has happened so many times, I couldn't tell you how many times this has happened over the years, somebody has come along from a different company, and they've sat, and they've come back, and they've come back, and they've asked questions, and over the time, they've fallen in love with Jesus. They've come to know Jesus, they've come to trust Jesus, they've come to be thankful for what Jesus has done, and they start to walk with Jesus. To walk with Jesus, in a relationship with Jesus, speaking to him in prayer, listening to him as he speaks to us through his word. And all sorts of things in life start to change. They with, by the power of God's Spirit, with the help of God, start to sort out their lives, get rid of different things that they used to do, that were entrapments or bondages, and could be some kind of inappropriate sexual relationship. I'm not going to do that anymore. Or somewhere where I was being used, I'm going to cut that person off. And they get out of that with the help of God, and they walk out of slavery into freedom. And they're walking with Jesus, walking with God on the way to heaven, promised land. And then on that walk, they suddenly, at some point, something happens, and they get tempted to turn around and look back to Egypt. And they start to think, oh, mate, it's a struggle out here in the wilderness. I'm free, I'm with God. But it was better back in Egypt. And they're not thinking it was better back in slavery to the devil. They're not thinking like that, but that's what's happening. And they nostalgically yearn for the leeks and the onions and the garlic and the melons and the cucumbers of a life of bondage. And we've had people over the time in City Bible Forum who've had their eyes turned back to Egypt, and then they've left God's camp and started walking back. Moses, is in a very difficult situation, and we'll pick him up in verse 10. Moses heard the people of every family wailing, each at the entrance to his tent. The Lord became exceedingly angry. So God's anger is blazing hotly. Moses was troubled. Very difficult dilemma for Moses. The people are rebellious. God is angry, and Moses feels like he's trapped, caught in the middle between God and the people. Verse 11, he asked the Lord, "Why have you brought me this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you that you put all the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised on oath to their forefathers?" Moses says, "I got two problems here. I got a problem. Where can I get meat for these people, 13? Where can I get meat for them? They keep wailing to me, give us meat. And my second problem, I can't carry them. I can't carry them by myself. The burden's too heavy for me. It's just too much, God. If this is how you're going to treat me, God, put me to death right now. If I've found favour in your eyes, do not let me face my own ruin." Two issues. The people say to God, "We want food, we want meat." And Moses says to God, "I want help." And in both cases, God gives them what they want. And so first, Moses gives spiritual help. Moses wants spiritual help. God gives him spiritual help. 16, the Lord said to Moses, "Bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them come to the tent of meeting that they may stand there with you." Now, remember, last week, God came present with his people at the tent of meeting in the center of the camp. Center of the camp, where God's tent of meeting was, that was where you met him. "And have them come to the tent of meeting that they may stand with you. I will come down, speak with you there, and I will take of the spirit that is on you and put it on them. And they will help you carry the burden of the people, so you will not have to carry it alone." You come down to verse 24. Moses went out, told the people what the Lord had said. He brought together 70 of their elders and had them stand around the tent. Moses brings them in the very center of the camp. 25, the Lord came down in clouds, spoke with him. He took of the spirit that was on him. Moses put the spirit on the 70 elders. When the spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but they did not do so again. Now, here's the next bit. Fascinating. 26, two men whose names were Eldad and Medad, they're great names for twins if you've got twins, had remained in the camp. They were listed among the elders. They did not go out to the tent, yet the spirit also rested on them, and they prophesied in the camp. A young man ran and told Moses, "Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp." Joshua, son of Nun, who'd been Moses' aide since youth, spoke up and said, "Moses, my lord, stop them." I mean, Joshua is thinking there's some kind of religious irregularity, some sort of threat to Moses' leadership. But in Numbers 12, next week, we will see that Moses was the humblest man on earth. 29, Moses replied, "Are you jealous for my sake? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets and that the Lord would put his spirit on them." Moses' first request was, "I need some spiritual help now." But now that he's got his wish for spiritual helpers, he makes another wish, another request. He says, I want all God's people to have the Spirit. I want all God's people to be prophets. I want all God's people to speak God's word. Now, that's Moses' wish back in Numbers 11. You keep Numbers. Where is it in the Bible? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, fourth book in the Bible. You keep running through the Bible and you get to the book of Joel. And you get to the book of Joel and 1,000, 1,500 years later, and there's a promise in the book of Joel, God speaking to the prophet Joel. God says to the prophet Joel, through the prophet Joel, and afterwards, verse 28 of chapter 2 of Joel, "I'll pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams. Your young men will see visions, even on my servants, both men and women. I'll pour out my spirit in those days." I mean, Moses was wishing that God would pour out his spirit. Moses was praying that God would pour out his spirit. And Joel says God's going to. Now, you keep reading through the Bible and you get to Jesus. And we get to book 60. Book 59, the Acts of the Apostles. And in that book, just after Jesus has died and risen again, there's this marvellous moment, 50 days after the resurrection of Jesus, the Feast of Pentecost, and thousands of people have gathered in Jerusalem. And there's this moment in Jerusalem, and people start speaking in different languages, the tongues of languages, people can't work them out. And they're saying, what is going on? What does this mean? And chapter 2 of Acts, verse 15, the Apostle Peter stands up and says, these men are not drunk, as you suppose. It's not Australia. It's only 9 in the morning. And this was what was spoken by the prophet Joel, 17. In the last days, God says, I'll pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. Even on my servants, both men and women, I'll pour out my spirit in those days, and they'll prophesy. And what Peter is saying is the thing that Moses wished for, the thing that Moses prayed for, the thing that Joel predicted, that has come true in Jesus. And Moses didn't know the full extent of what he was praying for when he said, I wish all God's people were prophets. I wish God would pour out his spirit on all of them. Moses is just thinking, I can't do it on my own. I wish God would give his spirit to more of them, so that more people would be internally moved by the spirit of God to love God, to trust God, to speak for him. But we discover in Jesus this massive democratization of the spirit of God. God giving his spirit to all his people. And what is the mark of having the Spirit of God? You can read it in 1 Corinthians 12, in the third verse there. I tell you, no one who is speaking by the Spirit of God says, Jesus be cursed. And no one can say, Jesus is Lord, except by the Holy Spirit. Have I got the Holy Spirit? Here's the question. Have you got the Holy Spirit? I mean, I'm not so much interested. I am personally interested in me, but you personally should be interested in you. Have you got the Holy Spirit? How do you tell? Litmus test. Are you a Jesus be cursed person, or are you a Jesus is Lord person? If you've got the Spirit of God, then the position of your life will be that Jesus is Lord. If you've got the Spirit of God, if you've got the Holy Spirit, then you'll want to hang with Jesus. You want to walk with Jesus. You want to listen to Jesus. You want to be with God in his holiness. You won't want to be looking back to Egypt. You'll want to be as close as you can to the presence of God. Now, what about the people's request? Moses wanted God to give his spirit more liberally to more people. The people wanted meat. So God gives the people what they want. In 18, God says, tell the people, consecrate yourself in preparation for tomorrow when you will eat meat. People in rebellion, looking back to Egypt, looking back to life in slavery, longing for meat. God gives them what they want. The Lord heard you when you wailed. If only we had meat to eat, we were better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat and you will eat it. Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Who's watched an episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch in the past? I mean, come on, hands up. I've admitted it. We're going to be, yeah. I don't believe that there's only such a small percentage. But I'll let you others who didn't put your hand up, I'll just think of you as liars. Shall we go around again? Who's seen Sabrina the Teenage Witch? Come on, be honest. Yeah. Now, I remember this episode. I've only actually watched one episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and I never knew that I was going to talk about it today, but I just came into my mind, this my only episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and Sabrina got in trouble for casting careless spells, and her master introduced a rule and to make her to be more careful with her spells. And before that episode, Sabrina was able to say undo, like control Z, and the spell was undone. And but in that episode, her undo permissions were withdrawn. And Sabrina, as she made a careless spell, got into trouble with it and made another spell and got into more and more trouble. And in the end, she regretted her spells because the consequences of her spells were bigger than she envisaged. And really, that's the position here. They're longing for meat. You long to go back to Egypt. And God says to them in verse 19, you will not eat of it just for one day or 2 days or 5 days or 10 days or 20 days, but for a whole month until it comes out of your nostrils and you loathe it. Why? It's very clear, because you've rejected the Lord who's among you, and you wailed before him saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? God had rescued you, and you've been grumbling, and you've been whinging, and God had provided manna. I mean, manna is good, manna is lovely, but you're longing for slavery. You're longing to be away from God who's given his presence. He's rescued you, and he's got a presence in the camp. You want to leave the center of the camp and go back to Egypt? Well, you can do that, but there's no control Z. There's no undo. What happens? A wind went out from the Lord. The word wind, ruach, spirit, God's spirit, here again. The wind went out from the Lord, drove quail in from the sea. It brought them down all round the camp to around 3 feet from the ground, as far as a day's walk in any direction. You want to leave the presence of God. You want to go back to Egypt. You go outside the camp, and there's the zone associated with death, and there's a whole lot of dead birds. And so 32, all that night and day and all the next day, the people went out and gathered quail. No one gathered less than 10 homers. That's 2 44-gallon drums. And they spread them out all round the camp. That is a lot of quail. A friend of ours gave us ham at Christmas, a big ham. By the second week in January, we're over ham. And, I mean, they've got 2 44-gallon drums of quail. They're going to be over it by the end of the month. While the meat was still between their teeth, 33, and before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people, and he struck them with a severe plague. Therefore, the place was named Kibroth Hattaavah, because they bury the people who craved the food. They'd craved the other food other than manna. But what they were craving, it was a more significant craving than melon. What they're craving was their old life without God. And they got what they wanted. Only they didn't realize what it entailed. They themselves become the fodder for the open mouths of graves. So conclusion for us is choose carefully. Because God will give us what we want. We're starting this journey with God, this walk with God through the desert, this walk with God through the wilderness as he takes us. And God's at the center of the camp. And God's to be at the center of our life. And God is guiding. And the warning today is don't turn away. Don't turn back to Egypt thinking, oh, the quail was better there. And we've got a face that I get a little niggle. A little niggle, a little tap on the shoulder that says, hey, turn around, see what's happening back in Egypt. And somehow I sometimes find I'm somebody who's begun to walk with God 2 decades ago now. But sometimes I find myself just getting that tap on the shoulder and looking back to Egypt and thinking, being tempted really, to imagine that life was better back then. And to grumble to God about something that I don't have now. And I forget. I was trapped. I was a slave to a different power. Friends, I don't think for many of us that we'll be seduced away from trusting God by food. But the principle's still the same. There's a seductive lie that comes to us and says, the pleasure of slavery, it looks better than freedom. And my mind gets warped, and I think that past that was actually bad, I actually think it's good. And I've got to say, no, it was terrible. It's terrible. I want to turn to God. I want to run to God. I want to walk with God, thanking him for the rescue. Russ.
All right. Well, we have a few minutes here. If you do have any questions, I've written any down. Janet can pick them up.
That clock is off, just so you know, just by a few minutes, I noticed.
But if you want to, also while Janet's going around, you can look at. We do have two flyers inside of your outline. For those of you who weren't able to make it last week, what we encourage you to do is take these. I'm back to the office. Keep one at your workstation. Just as a reminder, there's some really great talks coming up over the next 8 weeks, and looking at arrogance, fear, anger, money, and sex, just as Dominic had
Thank you, Dominic.
And so we encourage you to come back. But also what we encourage you to do is hand this to someone who might be of interest in them coming along to hearing some of these talks. And so we just encourage you to take these with you today. And so over the next few minutes, what we'll do is we'll have Dominic go through and just answer any of the questions that you may have about the talk today. So,
Dominic?
Sure, thanks very much, Russell. And I've had 10 seconds to look at one question and no time to look at the other one. Let's go. Take of the Spirit, is this a reduction of the blessing to Moses? No, I don't think it is a reduction of the blessing to Moses. I think the pattern of God and his Spirit through the Bible is that God gives his Spirit to a select few at the beginning, and then over time, the blessing of God's Spirit is distributed more widely. And you could read Ezekiel chapter 33, and there is the clear promise there of the day when God's Spirit might be given to lots of people, and the impact that it might be, that it wouldn't just be a few people who are following and trusting God, but lots and lots of people who are following and trusting God. And so I don't think it is a reduction of the Spirit of God to Moses. Next one, Moses had a special relationship with God. Is God judging Moses for his own grumbling? Yes. In this situation and in a couple of other situations, Moses does grumble. And the sharp edge of that is that we will see next week and that Moses himself does not get to make it into the promised land. And so we'll actually dig around on that issue in detail next week in the City Bible Forum. Was God's Spirit enough to empower Moses to lead and Moses wouldn't trust God? I might leave that whole subject of Moses and his leadership and his own personal sin to next week, and we'll pick that up then next week. What do you think is the correct response of the Israelite people? I think the correct response of the Israelite people would be to see, wow, God has done an amazing thing. He's defeated the biggest superpower that there is in the known world. He's defeated the most powerful forces of the known world. And he has saved me by his generosity, not because of anything I have done. He just chose to save me. And you know what? The way he did it was through the blood of a lamb painted on the doorpost. A lamb was slaughtered, painted on the doorpost. And now I have this freedom. And now I have this freedom, but God is walking with me, and God has told me how to live. And God has said, walk with me and live my ways. I will be your God. Now follow my commandments. And there's a series of commandments. He says, I'm going to bring you to this land, and it's going to be wonderful. We're going to spend some time walking. And it's exactly the same today. Because there I was, trapped in sin. There I was, trapped rebelling against God. And then God saved me by his extraordinary generosity, his extraordinary grace. And you know how he saved me? By the blood of a lamb, by his own son dying in my place. And when that moment had happened, that Jesus had died in my place and I was saved, God said, Dominic, I want you to start walking with me and following me and walking my way. And I've got some commands and directions for how you to walk, because remember, I'm God and you're not. And here's how we're going to live. And what we're going to see here in Numbers is really physical metaphor of what is spiritually happening in the lives of people who walk with God today. Now, that's going to be really helpful for you if you're somebody right now who's walking with God, and particularly helpful if you're somebody who's right now walking with God but finding you're dealing with temptations, seductions to seduce you away. But it'll also be really helpful for you if you're somebody who is thinking of walking with God, because it'll actually give you a real life picture over the next few weeks of some of the real issues that come up of what on the ground a genuine walk with God looks like. And it's not a picnic walking with God, it's actually a struggle walking in the wilderness. And so, but there is a wonderful thing, far better to be walking in the wilderness with a God who loves you than back in slavery with a tyrant. Russell.
Thanks, Dominic. Well, we encourage you to come back next week to hear, again, it's about arrogance. I'm sure that you never deal with any arrogance within the office or in the workplace. What was really impactful about this next talk was that sometimes when we think of arrogance, we have a tendency to think of, well, everybody else has issues with arrogance. Of course, I don't. And it really kind of evaluating where that arrogance can actually stem from. So I think that we love to have you come back next week, and thanks again for today. Have a great day.